Heather was going to do this part of the presentation. She just had a baby, so she was not able to be here, and so I'm going to cover what she was going to talk about. Let me tell you how I feel kind of personally and how I've promoted this and why it's worked for me and my community. I look at violence towards animals not only as being linked to violence towards humans, but I look at it as a public safety issue and a public health issue. And that's why I've been able to promote it so successfully locally, because you get the buy-in from the public. Once you take it out of the animal welfare arena, you get a lot greater buy-in. I see the significance also, it's not just this link of violence, it's the link among all the agencies and all the stakeholders in our community that can make our community healthier and safer by recognizing this component. We just can't take animals out of the equation. They are just a huge marker for all of us. The significance for public safety is threefold. Number one, crime prevention. If we see someone injuring or harming or who's neglecting an animal and we intervene early, we may well be able to stop violence from escalating or violence towards humans. Number two, it helps us with dangerousness assessment. It's a valuable tool not only for law enforcement but for the community. If you looked at an act of animal cruelty, and depending on how it takes place, you can determine how dangerous someone is. For example, if the animal is killed or tortured, the use of fire, if there's sexual issues, if they knew the animal, if they tape record or videotape it. Every one of these factors should elevate that person in your mind as being a greater danger in your community. And third, I see it as breaking the cycle of family violence. If we don't talk about animal cruelty, we're simply not going to break that cycle of violence. And I agree with what John said. In Denver, we have a mandatory arrest in domestic violence. I don't care if the perpetrator is a cop or young or old or male or female, we arrest them. Eventually, I'd like to see that in felony animal cruelty cases. We're moving in that direction. So I see it as breaking the cycle of family violence. And I don't know if Dr. Ashione's going to talk about the safe haven. I'm going to allude to it momentarily. So it's threefold for public safety. And for public health, I think that it was the former Surgeon General, C. Everett Koop, in the mid-80s, they did a study, and they said that violence is a huge public health issue. Teen violence, domestic violence, and you cannot take animal violence out of that equation. So I think it's really important for the public health sector to get a grip on violence costs the community a lot. So if we intervene early, we might be able to save lives and, you know, make for greater health. What Heather wanted me to talk to you about was the need to educate law enforcement on the link. It's important to educate law enforcement because many of them, surprisingly, have no idea about the connection to human violence. And I have found that it's been very successful that I train every recruit class. I hope that Colorado moves towards New Jersey. I'd like to see certification and greater education. What's really important is, number one, give them education in the classroom. Teach them about the link, show them the documented and tested studies about serial killers or the correlation of violence, and then take them out in the field and show them and help them in investigating animal cruelty cases. When I talked earlier about this link and collaboration among all the agencies, this is where it really has to work. I think in most communities, the weakest link for me is the relationship between animal control and law enforcement. It is broken in Denver. And I'm still working on fixing it, but it's really difficult. So what I try to do is say, bring your strengths to the table. Bring your strengths to the investigation. I don't expect a police officer to handle or deal with an injured or dying animal. They simply do not know how to do it, don't know how to do it safely, and shouldn't do it. In the same regard, many animal control officers don't know how to write a search warrant, don't know how to investigate a crime scene, don't know how to interrogate the accused. So I say to them, partner up. Bring your respective strengths to the investigation and to the table. I can also tell you that one of the fastest growing fields is veterinary forensics. So I'm trying to excite the police department into getting involved. And what animals can tell us about a crime scene? It's no secret that at a crime scene, the offender often leaves something of him or herself at the scene and often takes something from the scene with them. So we want the evidence there and however it moved, and we need to work together on this. We need law enforcement to recognize animals that are abused. So if they respond to a domestic violence scene, is there a dog cowering in the corner every time the husband walks in, or the female? Watch for those signs. There may be signs of cruelty. There's a huge percentage of co-occurrence. It just doesn't happen in a vacuum. We see cruelty to animals, neglect of animals, child abuse and child neglect, significant or intimate partner violence, and elder abuse. It's really important, too, to properly document the abuse. I always say it's a crime. Cruelty to animals is a crime. Treat it like any other crime scene. Take pictures. Take measurements. Get statements. And get search warrants. And don't take things without a warrant, because I will lose them. And if I lose them and it's suppressed, I have no case. And so it's really important to have the in-house training and the in-the-field training. I think it's also important to try to allocate better resources. One of the biggest complaints, and I'll talk to you when I get to my part, is I just don't have the money, and it's just a dog, and I'm handling murder and rape and all sorts of serious crimes against humans. Well, once they understand this link, they understand the significance of pouring some resources into the animal cruelty cases. Just like any other crime, there are tiers. Some are less egregious than others, and we need to put the resources where we're going to get the most bang for our buck. It's really important, too, to have the community try to develop brochures, self-help brochures, like we learned with domestic violence. Give them tools to get out of the abusive situation. Give them tools about how to handle their pets. Give them a card that gives them helplines or where they can take their pets. Where is there a safe haven? Tell them to compile the vaccination information and the records from their veterinarians and anything that they might, or medication for their pets. Explain to them that we can help extricate them and make these brochures available. Give it to them upon the arrest of the perpetrator. I also tell veterinarians, when we create these brochures, that we will ask them to put them in the bathrooms at the veterinary clinics. Or we should ask veterinarians to wear buttons that say, "You can talk to me about family abuse." I can't tell you how many calls I get from a veterinarian that says, "You know, the husband and wife came in together, and this is the second cat that's had a broken arm, and I think it's the husband doing it, but the wife can't tell me about it." So we talk about how they're going to deal with helping the police do the investigation. I also tell the veterinarians they aren't the police. They should not put themselves in harm's way. Trust the police to work with them. And we're working with Phil and Jim Pyle on hopefully developing a protocol with standardized questions to ask in animal cruelty cases, so we can learn about the species. Was it domestic violence related? What was the weapon? What were the injuries? How many animals? So that we can start creating an accurate database that hopefully will be mandated by the state. It's also important to not dismiss the animal cruelty charges in a domestic violence or other crime. You might have an arson or an assault or a theft, and there might be an animal cruelty charge that law enforcement simply overlooks because they don't know the cruelty statute perhaps as well as they should, or they're not as comfortable with it. We have a felony and a misdemeanor and a city charge in Denver. So we need to help train law enforcement and animal control. When do you call the city attorney and when do you call the district attorney? And it's real important, I hope you'll hear from Phil, about collecting this data so that we can assimilate it and come out with better and more useful tools for law enforcement and for animal control. Heather says that she's working on a pilot project which would incorporate several counties in the Jefferson County area, and this would involve animal control as well as all the law enforcement agencies in these neighboring counties. That would be police, sheriff, patrol, and I also think it's important to bring in the environmental services folks, all the public health people. In Colorado, particularly in Denver, animal control is under the Department of Environmental Health, same classification as the Denver coroner. And it's real. She said that she's acquired some grants. They're pending out there that would. She wants to make sure that the urban and the rural are included. Colorado has a huge blend of the urban and the rural. We have different resources, and we have different attitudes and different cultures. And it takes time to change some of the attitudes. And in some of the most depressed communities is when they need our help the most. Once again, collaborating, get out there, meet people. The veterinary community is your best friend. I think we are really lucky in Colorado that they take such an active role. Once again, she wants to stress that at the end of this pilot program, they hopefully will have brochures that they can distribute in all of these communities, and it will cover the cost of an animal control officer, because what she envisions in this pilot program is that it will mandate that an animal control officer will have to respond to all felony domestic violence cases where an animal is either residing in the home as a companion animal, or if there's livestock or animals on the premises that may be the subject of abuse or neglect. And hopefully it will allow the animal control officer to sit in on any interviews. Think about the benefit that will be to the law enforcement agent as well, because they can bring in issues peculiar to the animal that maybe law enforcement would miss or not see, so they can help them ask the pertinent questions. She suggests that they are allowed to sit in on interviews with the victim, the children, and the suspect, depending on what is allowed in that jurisdiction. I know in Denver, we have specific forensic interviewers for children who are witness or are victims of crime, particularly sexual assault. We have a wonderful setup that is fully videotaped, and it's just the interviewer and the child, and law enforcement stands behind a one-way mirror and watches it, and we can type questions. So the interviewer, if there's something that we want asked, we can communicate without interrupting it. They have the size right for the kid. If it's a certain age, the tables are really low to the ground, and they have tools and anatomically correct dolls. So, you know, how they interview the victim is going to depend on the agency, and of course interviewing the suspect is going to depend on whether or not they're in custody and if they've been advised of their rights and did they ask for a lawyer. And I always tell them, get whatever statement you can from the suspect, because a really, really bad lie is as good as a confession for me. So if they talk and they tell you something really stupid, it really helps me. Yes. Oh.
You got a couple, three minutes left on your speech, and so you got 15 more minutes after that.
Great. Okay. Thanks. Just talk faster. And once again, to look at the scene for cross-reporting, we need cross-training. In Colorado, it's mandatory for veterinarians to report animal cruelty and child abuse. So I'm often asked, you know, how do we recognize both or either? So we need to train our veterinarians. We need to cross-train each other. And once again, the animal control officer can help in the filing of charges and testify in court. And we will rely on Phil and Jim to work with us to develop these standardized questions and the database. The other thing that's important to note is often animal control and law enforcement aren't even housed in the same building. And I know in Denver, our computers don't talk to each other. I cannot access animal control's database. I can access city, state, and national, but I can't get into animal control. So we need to figure out a way to interface our computer systems to talk to each other. And we need to share information. I know one thing that's really important to me. If I can convict somebody of animal cruelty or animal neglect, I want them to not be able to adopt animals. And how do I get the word out? And how do we work with the sheltering agencies? So this is bigger than just law enforcement, animal control, veterinarians, public health. I mean, we need it to work with everyone. And we figure by training, we will overcome a lot of these obstacles. Hopefully, we will have better collaboration, better information sharing, and better training, so that everyone feels better equipped at a crime scene to fully investigate the case.
Oh, wow.
That was fast. Okay.
I just make a comment that I'm Jefferson County Environmental Health Director.
And I find it great to have people like Heather, and all our animal control officers are badged officers working at law enforcement. And through collaborative environment, when they come to the health department, they're some of our best friends, and they can do great jobs in zoonosis investigation. And for what Diane's talking about, that for their work will be great because they are police officers, and for us in Jefferson County, that's the way we like it, and they do a great job, and we're so proud to work with them.
The other thing I stress is to make this work, it has to be a 24/7 commitment by animal control, law enforcement. No more of this, well, I get off at 5 and call me on Monday. I'm like, oh no, it doesn't work that way. So we need to work with resources to allow them to staff it 24 hours a day.